With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Me away. G, 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 take me today.
Oh, hey, welcome to episode 33. It's our first episode out of the basement. We've made it out of the basement is where we've made it. So if you listen to last week's episode, you know that the intro song was recorded about 8 months ago when the two people that were in it were alive. It's got a David Bowie sample and a little nod to the It's Gary Shandling show. And now they're both dead. So last week, I asked people to email if I should redo an intro song and maybe include some people that should die or just leave the intro song as a homage. And of course, people said keep it as an homage. And some people, one person said make a Nickelback one. And I'm not sure if I could even make a Nickelback one that would be good. Maybe I can. But do I want them to die? I don't think I want them to die. Maybe they could make better music. But death seems a little harsh. So I'm still thinking on it, mulling it over. If you have an opinion, you could email thegaryhour@gmail.com and let us know what you think. So this episode, I talked to Seth Fergolzia from the band Doofus. He has a band called the 23 Sages. And we talk about music and art and inspirations and how to keep yourself inspired. And I truly think Seth has found it because he is inspired. And we get to hear two songs of his. It's the first musical performance of the podcast. I don't know why it took so long, but it was worth the wait because it's really great. And I hope you get to hear his performances. It segues in there rather nicely from this conversation with Gary Levitt, that's me, and Seth Fergolzia. Yeah!
How's your headphones?
Yeah, decent.
Decent or great?
Phenomenal.
You had the band Doofus for many years. It's like 10 years?
13.
13 years?
Uh-huh.
Doofus is such a funny name. How did you come up with the name Doofus?
Well, I started off with the name Rufus.
Uh-huh.
I had written a song with the name Rufus in it. It was kind of a silly song. And I was doing 4-track recordings to start. I haven't re-released those, but there were 2 tapes of Rufus songs. And then I found out there was already a band with that name, so I just switched a letter. And it stuck and seemed to fit my music a lot better back then.
Yeah, because it's kind of a silly and self-deprecating name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the early stuff was really weird and silly.
Was it? Did you mean it to be self-deprecating?
I've never considered doofus to be an insult necessarily. It's sort of like a loving insult, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like calling your child silly or something like that.
Yeah. Because one thing I've noticed from doing stand-up is that people love self-deprecation.
Mm.
It just gets people on
especially
your side.
Especially comedians.
Yeah.
Comedians love to make fun of themselves.
Because
I used to go to comedy open mics in the Lower East Side, and I just so many times people would be so insulting to themselves to the point where it wasn't funny. It was just sad.
You got to ride that line, yeah.
I know, right?
You got to stay on the funny side of the line.
Yeah. I personally don't, and at this point in my life, lean toward self-deprecation.
Mm-hmm. But I do feel like the first time I heard the name doofus, I immediately felt good about it.
Uh-huh.
And I think that might be, whether consciously or not, the self-deprecation of it.
Uh-huh.
I'm a doofus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's good to be proud of what you are.
So much helps with a good name, and I feel like that's a really good name.
Hmm. Yeah, I feel like I haven't chosen a good name since then.
As Rufus, maybe Rufus is available now.
Right.
But Rufus and Doofus are very different. Rufus doesn't have that self-deprecation, but Doofus mm-hmm. does.
It's got the tone, though, similar.
So why did you decide to end it after 13 years? I know you had a finale show.
Well, like I said, like you and I met, I guess, probably around 10 years ago in Ithaca, or when I was living in Ithaca.
Mm-hmm.
And then at that time, Doofus was still happening.
Yeah.
I moved to Rochester from Ithaca, and it was a bit more difficult to be coming back and forth to New York City to do rehearsals with the band.
Okay, so it's more about practicality, not like you said all that needed to be said with that project?
Right, yeah. I mean, I felt like it was like a era change for me.
Mm-hmm.
I went into a solo performance phase where I just toured solo for, I don't know, 2 or 3 years as I developed a band in Rochester. And then the past few years I've been starting to tour with a band again.
Yeah, because Doofus had this like wild anarchist carnival. You had so many people
mm-hmm.
at times, and it was constantly changing.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen some videos of you guys on YouTube where it just seems like a circus, musical circus.
Yeah, we had some weird, wild shows. Definitely, like, I remember this guy used to stand with us and like do the juggling with balls, like rolling in your hands, you know, that kind of juggling. He would do that on stage with us. I don't know. We would let anybody into the band, really, who wanted to be into the band if they were up for recording. Rehearsing.
Uh-huh. And they would do musical stuff or just performance?
I mean, that guy was just doing the juggling.
Yeah.
Some French guy. I can't even remember his name. There was quite a range between the levels of musicianship
mm-hmm.
from person to person.
Yeah.
I was trying to make a kind of folk music. My stuff, you know, is semi-complex, but I always tried to keep a simple string going through it.
Your stuff is complex, and I feel like it doesn't come off right away. Like, it took me a few listens to be like, oh, I feel like Seth might be classically trained or something.
Yeah.
Are you classically trained?
Yeah.
You are? Okay, uh-huh. See,
yeah,
maybe it's my density, but I didn't get it right away. And then seeing you perform a couple times, I was like, oh, there's something like modal going on or something sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely like fought against it the mm-hmm. whole time. But I
fought against your classical training?
Yeah, I started out playing at the age of 3, I started playing the violin. Played that for 6 months and quit. And then
at 3 years old, yeah. How did you even hold it or get a tone?
I don't know. I do remember playing some like, dun, 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 or something, you know?
Uh-huh.
But then I started on cello in 3rd grade and switched to the upright bass, and from bass, switched to bass guitar. from bass guitar, switched to acoustic to be able to write music, and then started writing music. And I went to college for classical bass for a semester.
So you could read.
I just butted heads with the teachers constantly.
Yeah.
And left, and went to Purchase, which was like a really free moving sort of environment, you know, like,
right.
As long as you were working on music, didn't care what kind of music you were making.
Mm-hmm.
They just wanted you to make quality music and you get good grades.
What's quality music?
What's quality music?
Is that up to the professor?
I don't know. That's good. It's a good question. I don't know. Just putting your heart into it. I think that at least that's the impression I had from my angle. I did well there because I wanted to be recording and writing music constantly. So I just did.
Right.
And so.
So when you learned classical music, did you learn how to read music?
Yep.
Because I find that a lot of people that learn how to read music first, they can't get creative.
Right.
You know, they can't. They're just like, they have to read the music in order to play it.
Yeah.
I had a cellist have a nervous breakdown when I was recording her.
Uh-huh.
Because she was recording on one of my songs and I kind of like told her what to play. And then there was an outro that was just C to F, just back and forth. And just at the outro, and it just was a long outro that fades, and I was just play whatever you want. And she's like, I can't play whatever I want. I go, but it's just C to F. You know the scale. Just play. And then I'm listening, and she just starts shrieking the strings. And I turn around, and I look at her, and she's tears are just pouring down her eyes.
Wow.
And she like totally tensed up.
Huh.
It was the weirdest thing. And I think it's like she couldn't improvise because that's all she, and she's an amazing player, but I find that a lot with classical players, they can't improvise at all.
Yeah. Well, you know, I went to a music camp as a kid. Mm-hmm. My dad was one of the teachers at it. He's a orchestra.
Oh, so you come from a family of musicians.
Yep, yep.
Oh, okay.
My dad was a high school orchestra teacher.
Okay.
Very good one, actually. And my mother, she went to school for children's music, and
so you had music in your household growing up. Wow, that's
My first paid gig was at six. I was in a boys' choir.
Haha, nice. 6 years old. That's pretty good to be earning money at music. Have you heard of the Suzuki method?
Sure.
Okay, because the Suzuki method combines improvisation and using your ear and your feeling with reading music.
Uh-huh.
But I think the key is that they teach you to first use your ear and then learn how to read.
Mm.
And I think learning how to read at first can inhibit people's use of their own will and their ear.
Sure, yeah.
You don't seem to have that problem.
I've never had that problem.
Yeah.
I had something to say, but I forgot what I was saying.
Well, your music is super creative and original, unique. I mean, no one would... you haven't really been called derivative of anything.
People make references, but it doesn't make sense to me.
What? The Residents? That's the only thing I can think of.
People always say Zappa or Captain Beefheart, and it's just because this stuff is a little bit on the weird side, and they just kind of throw all the weird stuff in one pile.
Right.
But I don't think that my stuff is really derivative of either of those. I do respect those artists.
Your parents, coming from a classical perspective, were they just outraged at what you've done?
No. My parents are cool people. Before I started actually making a living, I'd get pushed a little bit, you know, like get a job sort of stuff, but I've been surviving for a while now, so.
They're okay with you, because when I first wanted to play guitar, my father was like, well, if you're going to play guitar, you have to learn classical because that's the real music. And maybe that's kind of old-fashioned now, but your parents being classical musicians, did they have that elitism?
No, I don't think so. I think my father would have been happy if I went the classical route. They were happy when I went to, you know, school for classical music, but... Mm-hmm. I had like some crazy conflict with the teachers there. The bass instructor was just not nice. And then I had this one teacher, actually it's kind of an okay story. One of the teachers there, assigned for us to write something that was singable. And I wrote something that was a little bit difficult.
To sing.
Yeah. And he's like, okay, you know, like this is within the constraints of the assignment, but it's too hard to sing. Come back next week with a piece that is definitely definitely able to sing. Everyone has to get up and sing their part in front of the class. So everyone is writing like da 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 da, you know, just like simple things. And I wrote something that was all like dee do do dee, you know, like that.
Right, right.
And it's all written out. Like I practiced it for like, I don't know, 3 hours straight. This is like little 4-bar crazy insane melody that just went across 4 octaves. And he was like, this is not singable. And I got up and I sang the thing like perfectly.
Yeah.
And his jaw dropped and the whole class started applauding.
Nice.
And yeah, so after that, I had to leave the school.
So you had a creative conflict with the professor?
It just wasn't creative. And it's just probably similar to what you're talking about, the being stuck in the sheet music mode and not being able to think outside of the box.
Right.
I think I felt that way about the music program that I was in.
Mm-hmm.
And Purchase just matched me better.
Yeah. Music's a funny thing because I feel like some musicians treat it like a sport. People that could play really fast. Look how fast he is. But to me, music is all about the emotion of it. Like I want to feel an emotion.
Yeah.
Like I'd rather hear someone take a stick and bang on a tree in a way that's going to move me than someone that can fly up and down the scales and then switch to modes.
Uh-huh. Yeah, there are some really heartfelt, fast players, though, in the world, you know?
Right.
You know, there's some great music that moves quickly, but I can agree with that.
Yeah, just some people, there's different ways to see music. Like, you could see it as a sport, or you could see it as, like, a craft that has to be done a certain way, or you could just see it, like, I'm assuming you see it as just, like, a wide-open mode of expression.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I mean, I try to use it. I think in the past, I have so many years behind me and so many recordings, I can see the phases I've gone through, which mm-hmm. is kind of a fun thing about getting older.
Yeah.
And I can see that in my early years, I thought I knew everything.
Like in your 20s?
Yeah.
Everybody does.
And I wanted to, in the lyrical content, I wanted to like kind of tell people how to live better or something like that.
Uh-huh.
And then I went through a long stretch where I just wanted to express what I was feeling.
Right.
Just writing about my life. And in the recent years, I think I've been trying to tell some stories and to bring some positive change in the world, not preaching change, but like just, you know, trying to make something that feels good and helps encourage people and gives hope. And
yeah. It brings me to a thought, like, what is your reason for doing music? I know that's kind of a big question.
Yeah.
But do you have a philosophy or a reason that you do it? Because, I mean, you just said right now you to bring positivity and change.
Yeah.
And that to me is like, oh, you're doing it for the world. And then before your phase was to express yourself.
Yeah.
And in your 20s, maybe it was, who knows?
Yeah.
Mass confusion.
Right. Yeah. I don't know. My purpose. I mean, it's strange because it's linked in as my means of survival,
right?
At this point,
right?
Which I have often over the course of my life wanted to quit making music because I don't, or not quit making music, but quit doing it for money,
right?
Period.
Yeah.
Because of the link, and I don't want to think about what I'm writing or who I'm writing for. Mm-hmm. I want to create. But at the same time, I mean, music is written for. I go to shows where people just seemed so elated and joyful by the feeling of the music. And so I think, you know, it's a weird thing. I do write some music just for myself still, and I don't share that.
Yeah.
You know?
How do you decide what to share and what not to share? Is it just some stuff is too personal?
Yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. Or it's some stuff that you just know the general public doesn't want to hear.
You know? Really? I feel like I'm never quite sure.
I don't know. Yeah. Well, you know, like I wrote 100 songs in 4 months, and then I went through them all. I listened to them all.
Uh-huh.
And so I got, you know, some opinions about some of them, just being like, this is really depressing and sad, because I was in a sad mood. And
right.
And it's not like the kind of sad that's like beautiful and, you know, like your heart feels
like a melancholy.
Yeah.
Happy, sad.
Yeah. Like some shit is just pitiful,
mm-hmm.
you know, and everybody feels that stuff.
Yeah.
And because I was writing every day, you know, that's what came out on that day. And so I don't want to share that with the world. I don't see it bringing any positive energy to the mass consciousness.
Yeah, but yeah. When I'm sad, I listen to sad music.
I wrote plenty of sad songs.
Uh-huh.
I'm not saying I didn't, but some of them, I think, can actually, you know, music has a power to it as well. And if you're in a destructive mood,
right,
and like a self. Like not self-deprecating in the way that you were talking earlier, but like get, you know, like really down on yourself and the you just kind of like shit out some diarrhea. You don't want to give that to the world,
right?
You want to give them the nice turd.
Yeah, you have to polish it up a little bit.
A nice polished sparkling turd.
So you've been doing music for a while, and you said something before. You said now that you're getting older, and I know we briefly touched on this when we were off mics before, but how do you keep the spark alive, getting older, doing music?
I have no problem with that.
Uh-huh.
None at all. I don't know. I know some people, I guess, like as they get older, they run out of ideas or something. I feel like I have not even touched on 3% of the things that I want to do in this life, you know, not just musically, but, you know, artistically and experientially. And so to me, it seems kind of ridiculous to run out of ideas, but mm-hmm. I know that happens. To me, like, I just try to stay in it, you know, and it's just about being in a stream or like keeping a motor oiled. That's the 100 song project was for me. It was an exercise in writing. I felt like I had all this music in me that wasn't coming out,
mm-hmm.
And I was like looking at other musicians, and I'm like, I can write music of that level or something, you know, comparing myself to other people, and like, why am I doing this?
Right.
It's because I'm not writing. And so I just decided, okay, this 4 month stretch, its main focus is writing. And I just got up every morning. Actually, mornings became my writing time, which was unusual, because if I just write from inspiration, it'll happen in the darker hours.
Yeah.
But this was, you know, this was a project where I got up and wrote every day, and that was the first thing I did. I get up, do yoga, eat breakfast, and then write.
Let's explain the 100 song thing. So you decided that you're going to do this project where you make a song a week, written, recorded, and released.
Yeah. Well, originally, I just decided to write 100 songs.
Okay.
In the span of 4 months. Started in September.
Oh, just writing.
2014. And then as I was doing it, I was like, well, a friend of mine was setting up a subscription site for me. Why don't I start doing it through my subscription site? So, fargolzia.com became my subscription site, and he made it so, you know, people could subscribe to me for a monthly rate,
right,
of their choosing, and I would release material on the site.
Well, that discipline of writing a song a week without like anyone pressuring you, we got to get it out. It's got to come out. How do you keep that discipline?
I just kept my fans in mind. I guess the people who were paying money, I didn't want to gyp people.
Right.
I said I was going to put out 4 songs a month, mm-hmm. 4 fully produced songs a month. And I did stick with it. I had a couple times where I was like too busy, so I'd put out a unreleased track that I had already mixed, because some of the writing project I did on the computer. Mm-hmm. So I had a couple that I could throw in with, you know, so I had a little extra time here and there. And then I went on tour and everything got busy. I'm still working to get the last 13 tracks mixed, just financially, really, at this point. They're all recorded. It's just a matter of, one of them's like a 12-piece band. So it's all like recorded in a hi-fi studio, and I want to take it to a, you know, an engineer, and it's like, I don't know, 12 tracks or something. So it's got to be.
Yeah, that takes time.
That's expensive.
Yeah. So when you decided to write 100 songs and you were waking up every single day and just writing, because I think most artists just create when the mood hits them, when they're inspired.
Yeah.
And it's really different doing that than forcing yourself.
Absolutely. Yeah. If you listen to the project, songs are extremely varied.
Right.
Totally different. And by the end of it, I was like, how do I write more songs? And came up with like different techniques for writing songs. It was cool. Like I wrote this one song about Berlin. I decided I wanted to write a song about Berlin because I like the city and have a lot of friends there, and it kind of feels like New York to me.
Mm-hmm.
I went out for a walk, pen and paper in hand, and just started jotting down all the little experiences that I could remember of my life passing through Berlin over the past 10 years on tours. And I put all that stuff down, and on one side of a notebook, and on the other side of the notebook, I just looked at all this stuff, and I'd write like poetic lines that would tie certain events together. So it made this one poem on the other side of the page.
What you're describing is a technique, which is awesome, because there's techniques to everything, and I think sometimes people don't even realize they're doing a technique.
Uh-huh.
And maybe you've created this technique, but it's almost like a comedy writing technique where you list out the tropes of something, and then you can kind of put together jokes, or it helps you think of jokes that way.
Uh-huh.
And songwriting is very similar.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so this was over the course of a couple hours that I did all that, and then as I continued my walk, it was all on like a sunny morning, just walking around, took my phone and sang all the words into my phone, and got home from my walk, picked up my guitar, figured out the chords that would go behind the vocal part, and then just worked it and worked it and worked it, and then recorded it, and there it was.
That's really cool, and that's really different than just waiting to be inspired for a feeling to hit you.
Yeah, and it's totally one of my favorite songs, especially because it's really, as far as the chords go that you play behind the vocals, it's kind of tongue-twisting or finger-twisting. Because...
What's that song called?
It's called Berlin.
Okay.
You know, plain and simple. I like worked out these chords that went with the vocal, which I had written that sounded naturally, you know, like I just sang it in it without thinking too much about it. And then, but the chords change in a unpredictable way. It took me a long time to get that song down. I still fuck it up.
Man, we've never had anyone play on the podcast. If you wanted to play a song, you would be the very first.
Oh, yeah, I could do that.
Okay. Do you want to play a bit of Berlin right now? I'll pause it. You could get your guitar out.
Sure. Yeah, it's awesome.
Cool. This is the song Berlin?
Yeah.
This is great. We've heard the technique. Now we'll hear the song.
I know. I hope I can play it. Oh, I think you just kind of ran over my headphones. Give me a little. Yeah. Backward we walk, backward we walk, backward we walk, like the ticking of a clock. Into the past, to a city in my dreams, to Berlin, 100 memories of Berlin. Not sure how I got there, with a guitar in my hand, suddenly greeted by new and friendly hands. Smiling faces, helpful hands, made me feel at home in the memory of Berlin. In my memory of Berlin, they flew me to the river with my band to the spree, them and me, them and me. Had us at the House of World Culture, our merry band gave us food, fed us well, gave us food. And at the house where culture showed its face to us that night, our delight, our new friend, our new show. At the end, in a church, at a show, they were smoking in the church, they were smoking in the church. We were burning when the cops came, burning when they came. They tried to shut us down, said we couldn't make a sound, or they'd steal ours away. All we were sharing joy, so we put it in the hands of our friendly host. Let them sing, let them boom, as we backed out of the room. To applause filled with smoke, as the rafters start to choke, it's no joke, we were loco then. Sharing sound, sharing laughter, sharing drink, sharing night time. Down by the river, where everyone lives, on the top floor, little tiny thrift stores, squatting graffiti, making beauty. Green spaces, green faces, Berlin, Berlin, Berlin.
Nice.
Man, that's so brave to just play a song like that.
What do you mean?
It's just like you're not on a stage, you know, you're just like, I just asked you to play a song, you did it, and it was great. It's really, really brave.
Didn't feel brave to me.
That's awesome, because you're just a natural musician. It's almost like you played violin or something when you were 3 years old.
Almost.
Yeah. Thank you for doing that. You're the very first musician to perform.
Nice. And I'm also the first one in your new space, right?
Yeah, you're the first.
Are you calling this space something?
What should this new space be called? I don't know yet. This is my second day here. Very exciting.
Hmm.
Yeah. It's like a whole new life, a whole new change.
Yeah.
I'm very excited. So, what's next for you musically?
I'm putting on one, but I'm playing at a couple of Bernie Sanders benefits upstate. Syracuse and Rochester were teaming up, putting on two big events 2 days in a row. One at the Palace Theater in Syracuse on the 15th of April, and then one at Anthology in Rochester on the 16th. And I'm the one booking the one on the 16th.
Uh-huh.
I did one in February as well. It was really successful. We opened a campaign office.
Oh, wow.
And, just got a lot of promotional materials for the campaign.
Have you always been involved in politics?
Nope. I feel real strong about Bernie Sanders.
Mm-hmm. 2008, Obama.
Yeah, I voted for him.
But you weren't as.
I was into it.
Yeah,
it just kind of like I've gone through phases of feeling political.
Mm-hmm. Is it a different time of your life, maybe?
Well, I think he's a once in a lifetime candidate.
Bernie.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I don't think we're going to get, I don't know, maybe we'll have more chances like this to get someone as liberally minded as him into office, but there's just a lot of fire behind him. It feels almost like the Occupy movement.
Yeah. We've never had someone this left before.
Yeah. So hopefully the fire won't get squelched and
yeah,
I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah.
I find his message to be, hopeful and he just seems like he really cares and is kind of no nonsense mm-hmm. sort of guy. And, obviously, you know, not taking money from the big businesses. And it would be wonderful if we could take our lives back
mm-hmm.
from the corporations who seem to own them right now.
Yeah, I get mixed because I totally understand that also. But even if you take corporate money out of everything, you're still left with humans. You're still left with greed, uh-huh. like the water situation in Flint. Uh-huh. That's not a corporate problem. That's just a human.
Right, yeah.
You know?
Yep. Obviously, he's not like the savior of us all. He's
Superman.
A man just like any of us. But, you know, I feel good about him.
Yeah.
And I want him. I feel like if he gets into office, good things will happen.
Yeah.
He wants to take a, you know, very active role in climate change. I think that's what we really need. Again, we can't just be like making little.
Right.
Little bitty changes. We need to really change it.
Yeah. Now, you've done a lot of touring in Europe.
Yep.
And how would you describe the cultural differences between the U.S. and some places you've gone to in Europe?
Well, it's hard to say because touring, you're in a bubble.
Mm-hmm.
You're surrounded by like-minded people wherever you go. You go to a city and you're immediately greeted by the promoter and then brought to the venue. You set up, maybe you take a walk around the town and see some, you know, like a restaurant or, you know, some sights or whatever. But for the most part, you're in this, for me, it's like this, you know, indie folk scene or whatever you would call it,
right?
Where, you know, they're not huge venues. It's but like supportive audiences and a little more merchandise gets purchased over there, which is nice.
Mm-hmm.
They treat the musician a little bit better than a lot of the venues over here in the U.S.
too. Treatment's so much better over there, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. I've had good treatment here. You know, I can't say all people,
mm-hmm.
but overall, it is kind of nice over there. I have toured a bit in the U.S. and I found that to be rewarding in other ways.
In what different ways?
Well, I mean, just convincing a U.S. audience as opposed to a German audience mm-hmm. is a totally different thing. You know, the people want something different. Their culture is different, so the music they desire is going to be different as well. So
the Germans, you mean?
But they're different from each other, the U.S., right. Germans, okay. or whatever. You know, how drastically different a culture is, you then have to kind of learn how to show that side of yourself. Show them, you know, like, I don't know. I feel like I have to, if I'm on tour in the U.S., I will play a different set than I would if I was over in Germany.
So it's almost like different, you know how different people bring out different sides of you?
Yeah.
Would you say it's almost like that?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's interesting. I like that. So you do, with all this touring, have you found it hard to keep a relationship? Because, you know, once you're gone, you know, if you're in a relationship and once you're gone, it's like tricky. It becomes yeah. long distance all of a sudden.
Hmm. I think relationships thrive on space, personally.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you're around a person too much, you turn into a boring person, you know? If you people, each person has to have a life of their own. If you're in some sort of relationship, the person you're with, if I don't know, I think each person, each individual feels, maybe I'm wrong, but like as an individual, seeing many individuals, I think we all feel more fulfilled when we have things that we can call our own.
Yes, like our own that we don't share, you mean?
Yeah, just our special thing that we do.
Right, know? Like for you, it's your music.
Right, I write music, and that's what makes me special to me.
Mm-hmm.
And if somebody doesn't have their thing, then they might often look to another person to fulfill that need in themselves. And for me, that's not a healthy relationship. I think if two people are together, they should also be okay with being apart.
Mm-hmm.
And actually enjoy that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I get to do this on my own. You know, that's an awesome thing, to do something by yourself.
Yeah. Well, right now you're with someone that you're playing music with, right? She's in your band.
Yeah.
Because there's something cool about having a project together. And I did that for many years.
Uh-huh.
Would you recommend that? Because that could be that could blur the lines of what's yours.
Right. Hmm. Well, I mean, there's no question in my band whose band it is.
Right.
I think. But, you know,
because you fine her, right? She gets fined if she hits a bad note.
Yeah. The old five. I think it's great. My band is different than a lot of bands, though, that we like hang out like as a family, sort of. You know, we're not all family members, but Laura, my girlfriend, is in the band. Her brother is in the band, and then everybody else just feels like family. You know, we're all good friends, and that's the way that's the way of my work. Like it's always been that way. Like it's been friendship over musicianship often in the past. Now I'm trying to, you know, couple those two and kind of, you know, it's not an open door anymore. Like it was with Doofus. It's a, you know, audition process or.
Yeah. Cause doesn't that get hard because you're such a good musician to play with someone that's not that good a musician, even though you might get along with them personally?
I did it for years. It took a lot of patience. I used to teach at a music camp,
mm-hmm.
and we would write music together. Me and these, like, well, the younger class was 6th to 8th graders, and then the older class was 9th to 12th,
mm-hmm.
and we'd write music together. And I mean, those kids were musicians. Some of the people in my bands have just, you know, been people who can sing a tune.
Right.
And they just are there singing. And it could be pretty difficult, especially for really good players. Like, I have the patience for it because I've just done it for years.
Mm-hmm.
But some musicians, like, are really good players and can pick up a song within 3 plays through.
Yeah.
Whereas someone who just, you know, sings a tune, it might take them like an hour or two to learn a song.
Right. And that's where the patience comes in.
Yeah. But to do that in front of the whole band, it's not fair to the players who can do stuff more quickly. So I've broken off into a 4-piece with 3 of the other guys from the band who are some of the quicker learners, and we've been working on material as Multibird, and that quartet is my touring band now.
Oh, nice.
And so our full band, who are actually all pretty solid musicians, horns, it's called 23 Sages. We've got, you know, sax and trumpet, trombone, tuba, and flute. So those are the other players that play when we do bigger shows upstate.
Yeah.
We don't really travel with that. It's just kind of,
that's a lot of people.
A lot of people.
And big instruments to travel with.
Yeah. I need a sip of water.
Yeah, grab it.
Hi, Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I guess. Would you want to play? Maybe play another tune to take us out when we end it?
Okay, I'll leave it like this.
Cool. Yeah, that was really great.
Thanks. Did you hear the guitar?
Yeah. And your voice on the guitar is such different frequencies that to bring up the guitar, I just got to raise those.
Oh, cool.
Those frequencies. So.
Yeah, I think they put sugar in the New York water.
The water tastes sweet?
Yeah.
You think they put sugar and chlorine in the water?
The sugar's to make the chlorine go down.
It tastes so sweet. So that does take a lot of patience because, when I was having a rotating band, that was very difficult. Some people learn very quickly and some people not. Especially with drummers, like a drummer that isn't good is painful.
The drummer I'm working with now is the first drummer I've actually worked with since Doofus. I've just had a resistance to playing with full kit because it's such a powerful instrument.
Yeah.
And if a person is at all controlling, they just take over the band.
Yeah.
And I can't be with that, mm-hmm. So I like for a while with the 23 Sages, I was playing the kick drum. And then we had two guys playing snare and floor tom. They both played those and each had some cymbals and stuff.
So you just take the drummer and break it up between three people.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's good.
And that had a cool effect. It was a little messy sometimes, but
That kind of anarchy could be a good energy though.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're playing in a band with your girlfriend Laura. Is this tricky? Do you prefer it? Do you not prefer it? Would you recommend it?
If you get along well, I think it's worth it.
Mm-hmm.
She's an awesome woman, and I can count on her. Like if we finish a set and I can't run out to the merchandise table right away, she'll jump over there and maybe we'll make some more sales that way.
Right.
Got to make those sales.
Yeah.
And you got to be right at the table right after you play.
Yeah.
So sometimes you get stopped by somebody we help each other along. I think that's what the main point of having a good relationship is helping each other.
Yeah. Yeah. Relationships are very tricky. Very tricky. How do you feel about the state of the music industry? Have you noticed? Because when I was touring, I definitely noticed CD sales pretty steadily and rather quickly die down.
Mm.
People would come up to the merch booth and want to buy a shirt instead of music. And I'd say, oh, do you have the album? They'd say, yeah, I got it already. I'd say, oh, just out of curiosity, where'd you get it? And they would say, oh, the internet. And, I'm like, oh, on iTunes, and they wouldn't even know. It's like they wouldn't even know the difference between buying it on iTunes or just streaming it, or it's right. Just
yeah. Yeah, it's just there.
Have you noticed obviously the industry's changed, but
yeah, I haven't noticed an extreme change.
Mm-hmm. Well, the subscription service that you're doing is super smart.
It's been really cool. It didn't pay my bills, but it definitely helped through the past year.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm continuing it. I'm going to open up a Patreon account too.
A what account?
Patreon. It's a subscription service.
Okay.
I think all the material on there is free, but people can subscribe to it. It's an interesting way. Like they pay per thing, you know, like someone subscribes for, say, like $8 maximum.
Yeah.
$2 per song you put up.
Uh-huh.
So if you put up 4 songs, you get the $8. You put up 3, you get 6.
I see.
So they're paying for, I don't know.
It's to people make sure just people are just trying to figure out how to monetize this right thing.
Well, some people are making mad money at that. I've seen some people making, you know.
Yeah.
$5-10 grand a month on that. So.
Do you think it's harder or easier for a new band or musician to make some, at least a blue collar living at music? Because nowadays, like, you know, back in the 80s, obviously you needed a record label. You couldn't even get your music heard by people unless you had a record label put you into the record stores.
Right.
Or if you personally sent a cassette to each and every home address. But now the internet has obviously changed everything.
Yeah.
And it could be a good thing because it makes your music very accessible. But there's also so many more bands and musicians.
Mm-hmm. I think we're in the midst of a renaissance.
You do?
Yeah. I think that there's... For people who are doing really creative things that wouldn't have made it onto some sort of major label or anything like that, they can get their music out there. And that just, you know, the more minds creating, the more minds are, you know, discovering. And to me, it seems like, I just remember, I think back to my time when I finished college, which is like, I don't know, 16 years ago or something like that.
Uh-huh.
And I couldn't, maybe it was even longer than that. What the hell year is it? 18 years ago.
Who cares about time?
Well, it does matter because it has to do with the times we're living in.
Right.
At that time, you know, like, I think you could get some stuff on the internet, but it wasn't like mad prevalent. And now you can get anything, which is cool. 'Cause you just have access.
Yeah.
And I know that there's just like maybe too much to sift through, but if you do some sifting, you can find cool stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, at that time when I finished college, I didn't really listen to much music because I couldn't find much that I liked, like stuff that didn't really resonate too deeply with me that I would discover.
Yeah.
And since then I just, there's like so much stuff that I really enjoy.
Yeah.
And I've had tons of bands that are completely unknown come on tour through the house that I run up in Rochester, these house shows at Meddlesome Lab. And they're, you know, like just this amazing band comes through and, you know, like people buy like 2 CDs.
Right.
And it's just like, I would have never have found that band.
Yeah.
20 years ago.
Someone would have to turn you on to them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So... There's more stuff to sift through, but there's more to discover.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people who care about art are going to search and discover.
Mm-hmm.
And there's more opportunity for these people who might have these brilliant minds, but no money.
Right.
To, you know, get this like free download of a DAW, hook up a $200 mic and work wonders with it because they have a genius musical mind.
Yeah, anyone can record a song now. I mean, it's the software is out there.
Yeah,
and it's easily accessible.
I don't know. I think it's a wonderful thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have a theory that, like, you know, the Seattle grunge scene when Nirvana popped up. I feel like because of the internet, there's not going to be little pockets of sounds anymore. Like there was the Seattle sound in the early 90s. Right. And maybe the last one was New York City. With like the I don't know if they made it, the media made it, but there was kind of a sound with like the Strokes and the Yeah, Yeah, Yeahs, uh-huh. that garagey kind of sound. Uh-huh. And I feel like, maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like I haven't seen that since then.
Hmm.
And that's kind of correlates with when music really started to appear a lot on the internet.
Because
now it's more like a global thing.
Right. I guess we'll just see global pockets pop up.
Yeah.
Instead, like just movements that are like worldwide.
Well, the collective consciousness is now huge.
Right.
It's not just a little area anymore.
Yeah. I wish there was a little less competition in the music world, honestly.
Oh, there's, yeah.
Yes. I don't know. I feel like I'm a pretty good musician and it's still a struggle. You know, I feel.
Financially, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. Or,
you know, just to get, just to even, you know, remain known.
Mm-hmm.
I have a following, but I have to keep that up. I can't just like, you know, just let it grow on its own.
No, well, you know what? That's with every art form. You're only as good as your last creation.
Mm.
And you just got to keep creating.
Mm.
You know, if Louis C.K. stopped right now, it would be like, oh yeah, he was the guy. No one would. That his career would just die out.
Right.
You just got to keep creating.
Hmm.
That's the curse and the beauty
mm-hmm.
of what we're doing. Just got to keep. You're only as good as the last thing.
Hmm. I feel pretty good about my last thing.
Yeah. And you have all your past and your skills to pull from. So it's just getting more interesting.
Hmm.
Feel like taking us out with a song? I know you got to get going.
Sure, yeah.
Any song you want. But will you tell us a little bit?
About the song?
Yeah.
Okay. Got to think of a song first.
I mean, you have so many songs. Have you ever counted how many you have?
I haven't really counted how many. I know that when I was in my early 20s, I thought I had about 500.
Wow.
So, I don't know. That was the last time I counted. And I've definitely been writing since then. Shoot. Yeah, so, it's so weird having all these songs, but I can't think of one to play. Oh, I got one. It's fun. It's a little bit weird. So I do a lot of, most of the time when I start playing, I usually, on an average day in my home life, I'll start playing music around 9 and play till midnight every night. And some days I'll get my early day practice on too, which is ideal, but I'm so busy all the time with a kid and trying to make my living. So, but when I start practicing, I often will just start by like playing single notes on the guitar and singing those notes simultaneously, like. I'll just do stuff like that, just to get my voice warm and to like get my brain and my fingers and the guitar all linked together. And so I tried writing a song in that method. It's called Holy Mother. Moss that creeps, growing slowly, crosses stone, creep
creepy moss draping over everywhere it can. The moss is draping over everything it can, because its nature says it can. Long ago, in distant lands across galaxies, flew a stone, came to rest on lonely planets, soon made home, and grew from nearly nothing into life, a home to possibility, a place called Earth, like no other, a place where endless beauty shifts and shapes with life. Some call it our Holy Mother, she holds and guides her children into endless light. Oh, 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 oh. Take a peek, a look inside a history. Heaven speaks when one has open ears to nature. Moss will creep and crawl across the face of Mother. How she laughs as life will tickle her. She is kind and grants the gifts up from her bosom. Peace of mind when one dwells within her garden. What you'll find inside a mystic thinking, there is moss, a moss that's creeping over everything. A place called Earth, like no other, a place where endless beauty shifts and shapes with life. Some call it our Holy Mother, she holds and guides her children into endless light. Oh, oh, oh. Oh, 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 oh,
wow. Nice.
Thanks.
Do you always not use a pick?
I don't always not use a pick.
Do I always do statements with double negatives? Do I always not do statements with double negatives?
Nah, I play with a pick too.
You do, right?
Yeah.
Man, that's really cool.
Yeah, and I didn't finger pick for years and years. Mm-hmm. Just resisted it. Thought I was bad at it. And then I just realized, oh, you're going to actually learn how to do it.
Yeah.
And I do some finger picking. I'm okay at it.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, your music is constantly evolving and growing, and I think that's showing in your songs. It's awesome.
Thanks, man.
Yeah. Thanks for doing this.
Absolutely.
Thanks for, yeah.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Awesome. Really great.
Nice to make it out to Ridgewood.
Yes. Thanks for being our first guest in the new place and first musical performance.
Yeah, cool.
Haha.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.